about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
To infinity and beyond.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking, don't they?
It's classified.
You talking to me?
I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
I can't lie!
Expecto Patronum!
Entertainment X.
You never know what you're gonna get.
For this episode, I sit down and chat with Mary Sugarman. Mary is a casting director at the Tara Rubin Casting House. She has casted television, films, Broadway, and has done it on both coasts. We have a wonderful conversation about theater, life, casting, and finding security in your path, which really is so... It's so comforting to be reminded of things that we may have heard before or not have heard before and, you know, to hear it for the first time. It's really a wonderful conversation that's extremely wide-ranging, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So keep on keeping on. We're back. I'm Clayton Howe, and today with me is Mary Sugarman. Mary, hello.
Hi.
Yes, spring is coming. I always have to address the weather before we begin because sometimes it's pretty nasty here in the city and the weather is getting nicer, yeah. So I'm happy about it. Let's get right into it. What sparked your interest in entertainment? Where did it be? How did it begin for you?
You know, I was an actress when I was a little girl. I sang and danced and acted, you know, in regional theater and community theater and... went to performing arts day camp and performing arts sleepaway camp. And my parents were so supportive of it. And, you know, I traveled in different choruses and choirs. And it just kind of seemed like the natural course of events that I would go to school and study acting and music. And I did that. I have a BFA in musical theater from Emerson College in Boston. And then I was acting, you know, for a while after that. I did the national tour of Les Mis, and I did the national tour of Aspects of Love. You know, it's just such a weird full circle because now I work with, you know, all of those creatives as a casting director, and it's kind of awesome. It's like this great full circle, you know. But, you know, for me, it was, it became the kind of thing where I felt like, oh, I'm a good actor and a good singer, but other people do it better, you know? And I always just kind of felt like I really wanted to find something where I would feel like I'm the best at this. Mm-hmm. But I loved, you know, walking the world of the acting community and, you know, as an actor, you're always kind of thinking, should I go to LA? Should I go to Chicago? Should I go to New York? Mm-hmm. So after I'd been here for a while and, you know, kind of in and out of town with these other jobs, I kind of thought I needed a change of scenery. I was starting to question whether I wanted to stay in the business. You know, it's a lot of hard work being an actor. And if you're not doing that work, you're probably not getting jobs. So I sort of wound up thinking I'm going to go to LA and just kind of see what that's all about. You're always...
Now, you're going to LA to no longer perform, or you were thinking about
doing...
No,
I was still performing.
Okay.
I just kind of wanted to see what it was like out there. And, you know, the timing was right. A friend of mine had an extra room and we just kind of... fell in with each other. We'd always talked about living together out there if the time was right. When I had been out there with the Aspects tour, I was in the ensemble and I was understudying. And I went on one night and there was an agent there and I met him afterwards. And, you know, he offered to represent me if I was living out there. And so it was good to be able to go out there knowing that I had representation because it's such a different animal out there than it is here. Obviously, you know, here you can audition every day of your life if you want to.
if you want to.
And there, you're not getting into an audition without an agent. I mean, every now and then they'll have an open call for something, but it's rare. So I went out there thinking that I was still going to act. And I started going out on auditions and I did some voiceover work. And but I was feeling really at sea. And then a friend of mine who I'd gone to college with, who was producing a sitcom at the time, came to me and said, hey, they're looking for an assistant at the casting company that takes care of my show, and I think you'd be good at this, and I can get you an interview if that's something that you want to pursue. And I was by no means ready to make any sort of a definitive choice, but it just seemed a little cheeky to not take an interview like that, and it was something that I was super interested in, but you know, I didn't know anything about it, and I was well into my 30s at the time. Like, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't a kid. So I went and interviewed for this assistant job at a company that was then called Lieberman Hirschfeld, and I got this job, and it was fascinating. I mean, they were casting, you know, that was just like at the advent of, at the beginning of the HBO made for TV movies and miniseries and, you know, all of that stuff. There weren't 5,000 stations. And they were working on Seinfeld and Party of Five and all of Tom Hanks's stuff on HBO, like From the Earth to the Moon and Band of Brothers. And it was so different than anything I'd ever experienced before. And so I kind of decided to take this job when they offered it to me. It was not very much money. I was doing double duty as a hostess at a restaurant in the Valley while I was learning how to be an assistant in casting. And I wound up from there, I mean, it's such like a big, long story about how I sort of went from place to place, but I wound up meeting a lot of people through that job. I mean, you know, I was cutting sides and fetching coffee for people who were 10 years younger than me. It was super humbling. But I felt like I was getting it, you know, and I thought, oh, I want to do this. And it was, at that level, very creative. And from there, I went to, I'll tell you a funny story, I'll be really quick about it. A couple of different things happened that helped me sort of move from Lieberman Hirschfeld, which then became Lieberman Patton, to executive casting at DreamWorks and then finally at ABC Television. Two things happened at Lieberman Hirschfeld. I was there really to assist Bonnie Zane. And Bonnie left very soon after I got there to hang out her own shingle. And so sort of by default, I wound up talking, I wound up working for Mark Hirschfeld and Meg Lieberman. And so, and I also think because I was a little more mature than maybe some of the other assistants in the office, I was able to move fairly quickly. And I wound up suggesting someone for a guest spot on Seinfeld, and she booked it. And she wound up marrying one of the writers on Seinfeld. And so I was in their wedding party and I got to know all those guys really well. And when they finished up Seinfeld, that was the final season, they had a deal with DreamWorks and they were working on another pilot and they came to me about casting it. So it was kind of great that I got to cast something so quickly, but I did it certainly, you know, under the auspices of Meg and Mark, because I really didn't know what I was doing. They promoted me to casting director because that's what they needed to do in order for me to be able to work on this show. But the caveat was that I would stay an assistant on some of the other shows that I was already working on. And one of those shows was a show called Style and Substance, and it was for ABC, and I went to a session one day, and I was super early because, you know, I was always, like, worried that I was going to be late. It's, like, such a car culture, And I met a guy named Peter Tolan, who was sort of a musical theater geek like I was. And he's the guy who wrote the movie Analyze This, and he has created all of Dennis Leary's stuff. You know, we were talking about connections before Dennis Leary went to Emerson. So we sort of had connections through that. And we became fast friends, and then when Peter went to DreamWorks, he had a deal at DreamWorks and was starting to work on some stuff for Dennis, he brought up my name, and an opening came up there executive-wise, and I went and I left Lieberman Hirschfeld, and I got that job to sort of help them develop their TV. They weren't really doing any television at the time, but they were developing like Judd Apatow, and we were working on Freaks and Geeks and, you know, all of this amazing stuff. And, you know, I kind of found myself in an office the size of this apartment, like looking out over the Hollywood sign thinking like, today's the day I get fired. No, maybe today's the day I get fired, you know. But
why were you thinking that?
Because I was kind of learning on the job.
Yeah.
And once you are working at an executive level as a casting director, the job is different than putting the talent in the room. You really have to be concerned with demographics and budgets and how much you can spend and on given actors. And, you know, does this actor speak to what's lacking in viewership for this particular network?
It's a whole other level.
Completely different job. Yeah. So, because each television show is funded by a studio as well as a network, I kind of got to know the network people while I was at DreamWorks, and then a job came open at ABC, and I knew that they were doing movie musicals there, and they wanted me to supervise dramas, and I hadn't done any dramas yet. I'd only worked in half-hour television. And, you know, it was kind of at that point where there were still a ton of perks and there were lots of money, and it was amazing. Like, I've never made that much money before in my life. And I really liked the atmosphere, but was definitely a suit and didn't love the job. So I wound up during my time there at ABC, basically creating these workshops, because by then I had been in the room long enough to see that actors could control things that they didn't know that they could control. And I thought, oh, I should tell them this and they should pay me for it because it's valuable information. And and I started to love teaching. And once that took off, I realized, oh, I can do this anywhere. I can go home and do this, which is here in New York. So I quit. I mean, listen, there were a lot more false starts and stops, and it was a much more emotional journey for me than what I just told you. But I came back here, and, you know, I was working at a friend's wedding photography studio and coaching in my living room and, you know, coaching actors in my living room, and really didn't think that I would go back into casting. I was so burnt out. And at the time, I was sitting on the board of this not-for-profit group that helped bring inner-city schools arts programs that they otherwise wouldn't be able to afford. And I met this really special kid who was interested in casting, which is random, you know, because a 15-year-old kid usually isn't interested in something as specific as casting, nor do they even know that a casting job exists. And I called Tara Rubin, who had put me in everything I'd ever done as an actor, and asked if she needed any interns. And she was like, I'm kind of up to my ears in interns, but do you want to go to work? And I was like, what do you mean, like cast Broadway plays? Because she knew that I'd been casting in LA. We'd sort of kept in touch. And that's how it happened.
Wow.
I know. I don't know that I would have done it had it been anybody else.
Yeah.
But, you know, she sets the bar pretty high in the human dignity department. And so I was excited to work with her.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a number of questions. If we can rewind a little bit.
Yes. Sorry.
Back a few time zones to L.A. When you first went into casting, what were some of the, are there any standout moments, like stories, conversations, lessons learned, you know, day on the spot, on the job? Does anything come to mind? Or even as you navigate through DreamWorks and ABC, like standout moments, maybe, or we can even turn this into like where, in terms of actors controlling more than they think, a moment where an actor blew it for themselves, or in a good way or a bad way.
Yeah, I mean, the things, you know, that I was noticing that actors could control were sort of more mechanical things, you know, that had to do with, you know, how to sort of breathe the air of the television show or the film, like as they're walking into the room, and, you know, when they're auditioning for the camera, you know, how to sort of be as effective as possible. It's a different pace and it's a different art than auditioning in a room. I mean, that's like a whole other class, Clayton.
Yeah.
yes. But that was sort of what I'd started noticing the most. And then, you know, I mean, yeah, I could tell you like tons of stories about, you know, people that you meet and how the connections matter. And, you know, that I was like in the room when they pitched The Bachelor, you know, or how when I got to ABC, they were just developing J.J. Abrams. And so I got to work on the original Company of Alias. And he was just like, Lost was just a seed, you know, of an idea. And we would talk about it and I would be like, wait, what happens now? You know, like nobody knew what he was talking about. Yeah. But, you know, it opened up this whole new world to me because they sent me to the Aspen Comedy Festival and the Sundance Film Festival. And, you know, I learned about how networks and studios develop people's careers and how there's this big sort of area that is very much about marrying the writers and the actors and the producers and making this great match so that they can create something really wonderful. You know, you can see when something's sort of magical, you know? Yeah. But like all of a sudden I was, you know, on the set of a sitcom yeah. and or watching a table read or and seeing how that kind of those kinds of things were developed. And now it's not that different stylistically than what happens in theater, but then it was different. Acting was different. It shouldn't have been, but you know, it's definitely evolved into, especially for theater, a more truthful, organic way to go. You know, that's what happens when you have microphones, and that's what happens when these amazing directors and producers and writers who have never done anything commercial realize that, like, they have a great story to tell, and that now we're in a world where people are interested in that. I know I'm kind of all over the place here, aren't I?
Yeah, but no, not so much. I'm curious along with that, and communication. What had you learned, or have you learned, about human communication? Maybe when talking at a table conversation, you know, over a script or over casting, or you know, when to hold on to a point, when to let go of a point.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Like, I choose my words very carefully, but it took a long time, you know, to realize what would be politic and what would be refreshing truth versus something that is just kind of mean and negative. You know, you learn to always lead with positive. You learn to ask questions instead of saying how you're interpreting something right away, right? Because that the questions, once you hear the answer, that kind of leads you down the way to talk about things and what it is that you want or why you believe in someone.
Yeah.
You know, negativity never gets you very far. obviously not in any walk of life, but it's, you know, in the last 10 years, casting has changed so much because of, you know, this sort of mandate finally that there be complete inclusion and, you know, how many more people are writing for you know, for a play where everybody's going to see a little bit of themselves up there, mm-hmm. Which is awesome.
It's great.
Yeah.
It really is. Okay, so in terms of asking questions, what were the questions you were asking yourself as you were navigating these different career moves? And I ask this because a lot of people I know, like in my age, are you have this, you're going through so many jobs and you're deciding what to do. Am I doing what I'm doing? Is it right? Am I doing the right thing? Because we all want to do the right thing. And I'm curious if you had specific questions you're asking, or if you're kind of like, you know, just tipping your toe in a certain body of water and feeling it out.
I mean, I learned very quickly that you cannot possibly dip your toe. You know, you got to really jump in. Mm. If you're dipping your toe, somebody somewhere is getting ahead of you. Mm. So while I wanted to embrace sort of a kinder, gentler, more sensitive world, I also realized that part of what let me move up quickly was not being afraid to voice my opinions and to, like, you know, have an original thought and not be afraid to speak up about it. But I think I learned not to do that until I had as much of the full story as I possibly could have, meaning I had to kind of earn my right to speak. So for, you know, the first 3, 4, 5 years of my career in casting, I really like kept my mouth shut and my eyes and my ears open. And you kind of learn what works and what doesn't work as far as being able to guide creatives in certain directions. So I was always asking myself, am I going to be good enough? Is this really an objective opinion? You know, everybody sees things through different eyes, and how am I going to make sure that I honor and respect these very creative people's visions? You know, I asked myself if this was something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. When you make a commitment to somebody, they kind of expect that you're going to stay. Yeah. And as an actor, I'd been sort of like in and out of things because it's just kind of the nature of the beast. But, you know, in this regard, people sort of start to rely on you. And but I did learn that nothing's forever, and that you can certainly make a decision and jump in. And then if it doesn't work out, you can do something else. Like, nothing's permanent. And what I learned from that is that I think actors, especially young actors, are so cautious and they're so afraid to, like, not do what it seems right to do. But right is what's right for you. It's not what's right for the business. And so asking all of those questions of myself, the one thing that became really apparent is that there just aren't any rules. There is no right way to do it, and there is no wrong way to do it. And you got to kind of keep blinders on and not look to your right or your left to see what's happening with your friends or your, you know, the people that you sort of feel like you're in competition with, or because you'll set yourself up for failure every time, every time if you do that. You want to set yourself up to succeed in a way that lets you take opportunities and really be able to, like, carry them out. Meaning, I want to make sure I'm clear about this. Meaning that for some people, they should come to New York right away and start auditioning when they're ready, right? Some people should really, like, stay in Minneapolis and do some regional theater and save some money and know that if New York just seems too scary for them, not saying don't ever step outside your comfort zone, but then go to LA if you're more used to a car culture. Or I just think that you have to, like, find your people. You have to find your gym, and you have to find your church, and you have to find all of the things that kind of feed your soul, which makes you a good actor, or which will make you a better actor. Again, I kind of know I'm all over the place here, but you know, the one thing that I see all the time, especially with young actors, is that they sort of don't really think things through. And so you do something because you think that you're supposed to, and this, they're fish out of water in a way that like really makes them leave and leave the business. And had they done it a different way, they might have been able to sort of realize their potential in a way that they didn't, because they got so discouraged and so scared so quickly.
Yeah. You're really bringing up a wonderful point, because, and I know this was true for me, between my two cruise ship contracts I did immediately following college, I had that moment where I was like, oh, should I come? You know, it's time to go here. I should go there. Everyone says I should. And then I was like, yeah, but is that right for me? Or should I take another 8 months of what I can, my definition of comfort, you know, doing, because everyone's got a different definition of everything.
I mean, I think at some point you have to say like, this feels scary, but I know I need to do it now, you know? But there's so much amazing work being done everywhere now. Oh, yeah. And that's different even from 10, 15 years ago, you know? And you need to kind of like ask yourself what kind of a career you want to have. There's a lot of ways to live in the arts. Yeah. And, you know, there are amazing actors in Chicago. And we always think like, well, why wouldn't they want to come here? Mm-hmm. You know, well, they don't want to come here because they have a dog and a partner and a backyard, and they're playing roles that they're immersed in and happy doing. I have, you know, friends who live in Minneapolis, and, you know, he coaches their son's soccer team, and she has this amazing job with an advertising agency, and he's been like in the rep company at the Guthrie for 10 years and he loves his life. So do you want the cover of People magazine? Do you want to just be in plays? Do you want to, and you don't really know the answers to those questions, but you do know when you're comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know when you should be taking a risk, a safe risk.
There's no such thing as a safe risk.
Well, safe in the sense of you are lying to yourself and you think it's safe. Calculated. Yeah. Not you, but
No, that's fair.
In terms of, and I'm curious about this, about casting right now, for you, are you split 50-50 with theater, TV, film, or you're really mostly sticking in theater?
No, I mostly work in the theater. Yeah. You know, every now and then we'll do a pilot search, or I'll cast something that's not under Tara Shingle, you know, as like an independent feature or a short.
Cool. Yeah.
But for the most part, it's theater.
How has the landscape changed in terms of, well, because we were talking about how many opportunities there are now for actors.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what you've seen in terms of, and your views on the landscape changing for actors and opportunities. And it's difficult for me to ask you what you think others should be doing, but maybe smart moves people could be making with the opportunities that now present themselves with all of the technology we have. I don't know if this sparks any sort of answer in your mind.
Sure, yeah. I mean, technologically, you have to have some sort of a footprint, not even a question, you know, whether it's a website or whether it's a bunch of YouTube links with you doing some contrasting work or showing a clip from something that you did or a performance, you know, at whatever, 54 below, or there's so many things in developmental stages that we don't do auditions for. There's no budget for that. Auditions cost money. Studios cost money. Accompanists cost money. Readers cost money. I cost money. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, I know you mean.
So, you know, I need to be able to say, okay, this music director says, Mary, I trust you. I need 2 altos, 2 sopranos, 2 tenors, 2 basses. And these are the tracks. These are the kinds of roles. So these are the types of actors that we need. Can you send me some clips on 3 people for each one of those vocal parts?
Yeah.
I can't I can't put you forward if I can't bind you.
That's so true.
Yeah. So there's that. And then, you know, the other thing that's so amazing and that has changed so much is that we're in this amazing moment for all different shapes and colors and sizes and ages. And while all of the sort of cliche stuff that you hear, you know, women of a certain age, there's not a lot of work for. People of color, you know, are, you know, being fully included now. Listen, we have a ways to go, you know, for a bunch of different reasons. But that's something that's really different. And it's a conversation that comes up in every concept meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, which roles are you thinking of that can, where we can think a little bit outside the box, even though maybe it wasn't exactly what you pictured when you wrote it.
Mm. Yeah.
Because ultimately, you don't want to have to explain stuff anymore. Do you know what I mean? If you see, you know, an interracial couple, that shouldn't be like something that needs to be explained or change the storytelling. Yeah. But until we start doing it, and I mean like consistently and a lot, you know, it's sort of like if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
We just kind of have to do it.
And keep doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's different, but awesome. Yeah. And also kind of lets us be more creative than we've ever been allowed to do. Mm. Not that we're not allowed to be creative, but, you know, yeah.
I just think it's so interesting now because, like, you have, you know, if you're doing Grease, you need to find Danny Zuko. We all have a picture of Danny Zuko in our mind, and all of those pictures are different. But now, I guess there'd be more. I'm just so interested what that balance is between calling for getting what's called for versus getting to bring in a few other contestants that may not be right on the money, but can completely surprise what the team is.
Excuse me. Well, what's called for has changed. Danny Zuko, even though your eye is going and your ear is going to have to take a minute to get used to what you're seeing. Mm. Storytelling wise, there's really no reason why Danny Zuko can't be a person of color.
Yeah.
But what is hard is, you know, if race matters in the story, like in Miss Saigon or in West Side Story, or in, you know, you want to cast for a 21st century audience now without sacrificing the story, especially since classic shows like that. And obviously I work mostly in musicals. So that's really what is in the forefront of my mind when I talk about this. They're so relevant now, these stories like Saigon and West Side and Hamilton in their own ways. And we want to bring in a new audience, but nobody's doing a show like West Side Story anyway so that they can do it exactly the same way they did it 50 years ago.
No. Yeah.
Josh Henry just starred in Carousel. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
I'm excited to see Oklahoma.
Yeah, and what me they do too. With
that. Me and how too. How that's going to look. I think it's great. I had a conversation like this a few weeks ago with Zurin Villanueva.
Villanueva.
And we had a conversation about how, you know, the Jets and the Sharks need to have some sort of difference, but the witch needs to be green, but who plays the witch doesn't necessarily, you know, in Wicked doesn't necessarily. So it's interesting to get other views of what's happening. In terms of, I completely just lost my question. Oh, yes. Relationships in the industry. They're so key. It's a small community. 2 degrees of separation.
I thought you were asking if I was dating anyone.
No, yes. So now we're going to talk about dating. Who are you? No. But what are your views on relationships? I know it's talked, I feel like it's talked about a lot. I'm curious what your thoughts are on, you know, professional.
They're everything.
Yeah.
Not even a question. You know, part of the reason, maybe 80% of the reason anybody gets hired is because people want to be in the room with them and work with them. And it's really devastating to bring in a really talented actor who kind of kills it in there and then you know, somebody says, you know, I worked with him 10 years ago and he was kind of a douchebag. Sorry, am I allowed to say that?
You are. It's adult programming. You're good.
So, you know, you want to say, but it was 10 years ago. But
people change. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everybody deserves a second chance and, you know, all of that stuff. But there are just too many actors out there to take a chance. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, if it's really six of one, half dozen of the other, and it's against two people, the person who doesn't have any yuckiness floating out there about them, no matter when it was, is going to get the job.
Yeah. Because there are deadlines. Things need to happen.
Well, and life's too short. Like, why would you even take a chance? And I think, you know, just to go back to your other question quickly about social media and technology, you know, it's also like everybody thinks that they know you because they follow you on Twitter or on Facebook, and they form an opinion about you before they ever even meet you. So if there's a question about somebody, everybody behind that table is going home tonight and finding your Facebook page. So you need to really make sure that whatever's out there is something that you're okay with everybody seeing and knowing. Everybody. And by the way, forming their own opinions about what's really happening in that picture. Whether it is, whether that's truthful or not.
Yeah.
You know, there's
pictures
such
worth a thousand words.
Right.
It just comes to mind. It's true.
Right.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I think there's a big separation between social media and professional working here with theater. Because I know, you know, and I talked to fellow actors when I was like, social media is everything. But some are not paying such close attention to the content that is being distributed publicly. Because you can go, you know, you go on your phone right now and you can look up whatever you want, whoever you want.
Oh, yeah.
Is there something else you wanted to
add?
Well,
I was just going to say, you know, the other part of social media, of course, is that it doesn't hurt when you are somebody who has 90 billion followers as a personality. You know, you quickly realize when somebody's in over their head if they're hired for that reason. And so it's rare that somebody gets hired strictly based on that. But it's definitely a thing. Yeah. It's a thing the same way, you know, stunt casting or star casting happens.
Yeah, it's so interesting because now there's, you know, if you have X amount of followers, you know, with especially with advertisements, because there's no more general, you can no longer generally advertise to people. It's all got to be specific because we have so many choices. We're scrolling through so much stuff. We avoid a lot, you know, just subconsciously you cut it out. So if you have someone that you has a fan base, you know, and you put a Coca-Cola in their hand, you're you're going to get the Coke sold.
Yep.
So it's just kind of what it is. Do you find from sitting behind the table that theater is trending as a form of employment? Are you seeing more actors than any other time here in the city auditioning? Is that coming and bringing anything to mind, or do you see that? Do you notice that? I mean, you're making a face like you don't.
No.
But just for the people who can't
don't
see
you
this.
Don't tell people what my face looks like.
No, you're right. no, I'm curious because I see one thing. You know, I don't know.
It's interesting because, you know, I sit at EPAs and chorus calls and see so fewer people sometimes than we used to. And I kind of wonder where everybody is. Huh. Yeah. And I don't know if it's because people are so quick to type themselves out. I don't know if I just caught people on a bad day and the next day they show up and it's a much bigger turnout.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's also, you know, a lot more film and television actors who they're not just, you know, an actor, but right. Who come to New York and have, you know, a 3-month hiatus and can go, you know, do something at New York Theater Workshop, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of fantastic. So I don't know that it's that different. It's just kind of up and down all the time.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. It's interesting to me because, and I, it's funny the opinion that like I create based on where I am. Yeah. You know what I mean? So if I'm in a room with a whole bunch of people, I'm like, man, this is trending right now. Well, it very well may not be.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm curious to get an outside.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Almost. I don't know that that's really the right. You know, all due respect, yeah, I don't know that, like, of course theater's trending. It's fantastic, and it's always trending. It's always been trending, but, you know, it's really hard to make a commitment to theater because you have to pay your rent.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's true.
You know, and nobody's making a lot of money. Well, I shouldn't say that. You know, last year Broadway had its biggest year ever.
Mm.
You know, like $1 billion was made last year, but it's also... I mean, I probably shouldn't say this, but like for my money, I always think like, can we just like do away with the costumes and the scenery and the lights and stick a bulb somewhere and like just see who tells the story best? Because it just makes it, I mean, people do magnificent work. There are amazing lighting designers and of course, and costume designers.
Of course.
But it's just so expensive to go to the theater. And it just, I wish it was more accessible. I just do.
Yeah. I do too. Moving a little bit away from theater for a moment, because this conversation, we're going all over here. This is great. How do you stay balanced in life? I want to ask you, like, what do you do for fun? But, you know, that's such a, I feel like that's such an elementary question. How do you stay, how do you keep balance in work and life?
I remind myself that what I do is not cancer research. It's just casting, right? And that I need to make sure that I remember that self-care is not selfish. Mm. And I try really hard to not end my day with screens in front of me of any kind. I think that as you get older, you sort of realize that you have earned, you know, the right to say, this is how I have to do it in order to be good at my job.
Mm.
You know, I'm not worth anything to anybody if I'm constantly frantic and anxiety ridden and playing beat the clock. But I'm in a service business, so I need to serve. Otherwise, I don't get hired again. And sometimes if I'm not the first responder, then somebody else gets the gig. Yeah. So I really kind of have to take a deep breath and pick and choose when I need to take my work outside of the office and outside of my sessions and when it's just not that necessary.
Yeah.
You know, certainly in the last 5 or 6 years, I realized that when I get in a bad way, it's usually because I just haven't made the time to check in with my friends and my family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's huge for me. You know, I do yoga. I really try and meditate, although I have not mastered that in any way, shape, or form. If I can have like 2 hours to lay on my couch and read a book, I'm good to go for the rest of the day or the rest of the night.
Yeah.
You know, I nap. I say yes to meeting a friend for coffee or for a quick dinner instead of saying like, no, I think I'm going to like stay another hour and go through these breakdowns. But I can do that now because I also know because of great technology that I can go have dinner with a friend and feel so happy that I got to see them and give them a hug and hear their story and have them hear mine and maybe give me some advice or just make me just be a reminder that they're there in the world, that I can then come home and take a shower and curl up on my couch and open my laptop and go through the breakdowns for another hour. Yeah. I don't have to be at my desk at the office to do that anymore. And that's kind of amazing, but you have to have some serious discipline, you know, to like actually do it. I don't, you know, I love to travel. You know, when I can get the time off, I want to go someplace. I want to like see something brand spanking new. I'm a big sister and big brothers, big sisters, and I right. have, you know, a very long relationship with my little. And so checking in with her is always kind of like, oh, I feel better now. Mm. You know, I just kind of remind myself that, like, I've built this big, beautiful life. And if I get too far away from being balanced, you know, listen, people in the arts, like, very high highs and very low lows, right? Like, that's what we're used to. And I think some people think that something's wrong when you don't have that. And not to get too, like, you know, airy fairy about it, but balance sometimes feels weird. Like you're doing something wrong and you kind of start to crave an adventure or crave a disaster. Yeah. And that's something that I've definitely learned. Like, okay, nothing's wrong just because nothing huge is going on right now. You know, just stay in the moment.
Nothing's wrong because nothing huge is going on. I like that. Okay.
You know, it's all good. It's like everybody is like searching for balance, mm-hmm. and then we get it and we do not know what to do with it.
No, you want imbalance.
Oh my God. You're kind of looking around going like, all's quiet. What's happening?
Something's about to happen.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting thought. Do you read?
Yeah.
Do you read a lot? Do you have favorite books or any books that come to mind?
Yeah.
Or any, without making you list everything. Do any come to mind right off the bat?
I mean, my very favorite novel is East of Eden by John Steinbeck. It's one of the only books that I've read more than once. Huh. Last year, I read a book called A Little Life, which like took me to a place emotionally that was, you know, very new and different and really like stayed with me. But like, I couldn't wait to get back to that book whenever I had to put it down. You know, I loved Tina Fey's book.
Yeah.
I loved, oh my God, her name just went right out of my head. Indian actress, Mindy Kaling's book. You know, it's great to read books about powerful women who are helping to break a glass ceiling.
Yeah.
Anything where I can kind of shut my brain off, you know, I go to the theater. That's still really not work for me. I still get really like excited when I go to a theater, and I still get really excited when I go to the movies.
That's good. I know that was my next question in terms of casting. Cause are you find yourself watching a show thinking about tracks and castings and breakdowns, or can you shut that off and enjoy the show?
I don't have to shut it off to enjoy the show.
Okay.
You know, it's like, yes, of course, I'm always thinking about that stuff, but I'm still pretty easily delighted if something feels real to me and emotional and just like buzzing, you know, like really alive. And that's really thrilling. And that never gets old, even though, of course, I'm thinking like, does he sing?
You're like, does he think? Common pieces of incorrect advice. Are there any that you hear? If so, would you willing to share?
I'm trying to think of like super specific things.
Sure.
I think that, you know, the biggest thing is about auditioning and knowing that there really isn't a right way to do it or a wrong way to do it, as long as you are okay with really leaving a piece of yourself in the room. I don't care if it's 16 bars or a monologue or 30 pieces, you know, 30 pages of sides. I go to a lot of, you know, colleges and universities during like between like January and April. And, you know, I talk about the business of the business and audition technique and, you know, choosing the right material for yourself. And, you know, people are always sort of saying that what's so frustrating is that they hear so many completely different opinions from, you know, professionals about how they should sing a pop rock song, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what winds up happening a lot is that people become afraid to make really bold, vivid choices because they're worried that it's going to be so wrong But if it's real and truthful, I'm just going to think, oh, that's wrong for this. But that was such an interesting thing that they did. I wonder what else they do, you know? So for me, the biggest faux pas is when somebody says it must be this way or it must be that way. You need to wear this or don't ever do thus and such or, you know, short of making a pain in the ass of yourself, you can pretty much do anything that speaks your truth. I know that you're looking for something a little less esoteric than that, but
no, I'm not looking for anything in particular.
You know, as far as like what to wear and material to never do.
No.
Should I look at people behind the table? Should I not look at them? I kiss the reader? Should I not kiss the reader? You know.
I thought you could always kiss the reader. No. No, that's a perfect answer. And you're bringing up such a great point because I'm talking to kids, you know, just graduate kids, people close to my age who graduate college. And they're like, you know, someone told me X about myself. Someone told me Y about I don't know what to do to hair up, hair down, this, that. And it's like, well, if you're true to yourself and you leave, like what you said, leaving a piece of yourself in the room.
Yeah, I think
in a healthy way.
I think it's hard. I think it's really challenging and scary. I think a lot of actors want to be actors because they like playing pretend, because they can sort of hide behind a character. But there's always going to be a piece of yourself in it if you're telling the truth, right? Mm-hmm. And that's scary. It leaves you really vulnerable. But I also think that knowing that there's no right or wrong instead of frustrating should be freeing. There's no possible way to please everybody all of the time. Do you know? And you might be right about what it is that we're looking for, but maybe only for 2 minutes. You were right for 2 minutes, but now it's changed.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, and I find that whenever I say this, people seem to like feel better about things. You know, I always give this example when I'm teaching about how we can have this class, right? And you're wearing what you're wearing and you're reading what you're reading, you're singing what you're singing. We're in this room. It's raining outside. It is what it is, right? And then if we come back and do it the next night, in exactly the same room and you're wearing exactly the same clothes and you're doing exactly the same material and all circumstances are as alike from the night before as they possibly could be, except that the second night when we're doing it, I've had an argument with somebody and I have a cold and I've been running late all day and I'm just going to feel different. I'm just going to feel I'm flawed. I'm a professional, so I try to leave all of that stuff outside, like I expect that you try to do as well as the actor. But, you know, and then there's the eyes that people see things through. Meaning, you know, sometimes somebody comes in and I kind of like look down the table like, right? Was I right? Like, that person just killed. He's amazing. Yeah. And then the director's like, yeah, I don't get it. It's like, what? Did you not just see the thing that I just saw? That was so good.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. Or she's like, yeah, I've heard about that, but I don't really get what the, you know, like it's just, okay. So then I realized that it's kind of like casting is sort of like buying a gift for somebody who has completely different taste than you sometimes. Like I want them to be happy. It's not for me.
Yeah.
So I have to kind of like think in those terms, but I feel like that's what makes a good casting director too, right? You hook into, you get what that person is, what that director or that music director or that choreographer is going to respond to.
Yeah.
And then once you have a working relationship with those creatives, hopefully they come back to you over and over and over again.
Of course.
And then you have this kind of unspoken relationship with them where it's like, you have a shorthand, you know?
I get you. I get what.
Yeah.
Thank you for expanding on that.
Yeah.
I think that's a very big mystified section of the, you know, profession. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Your conversation with, you know, whomever, you know, director, choreographer, creative. So
yeah.
Thank you for expanding on that. Do you have advice that you would give your 20-year-old self? Or do you have advice you'd give a smart, driven college graduate, recent college graduate?
Well, which is it? What question do you want to answer?
I like the first one. I was just trying to give you another option, but I like the first one.
Okay. I can answer both of them. I sort of am a great believer in fate and destiny. And while I think that you do have some control over what happens, I really believe now, looking back on it, that I was exactly where I was supposed to be when I was there. So there's nothing that I would really change except to make sure that I treated myself the same way and took care of myself the same way that I would take care of somebody who I loved and cared about.
Yes. Yes, because the way we talk to ourselves may not be the way we
talk to... Oh, we're so hard on ourselves. And also, yeah. Like, I'm just a worrier. Like, I just am. And if I could have changed anything, like, I would, like, say, like, sleep. Don't worry about this. You know, figure out some way to know that this is going to be okay.
I love that you're saying this right now, because this is the crap that I'm telling myself right now. It's like, enjoy it. Yeah. You're alive. Just enjoy the process.
Well, it's hard not to write the end of the story because you want to prepare yourself for it not ending well.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't hurt so much, you know? And it's not really possible to write the end of the story. So it should even help you as an actor, because the only thing anybody's asking you to do as an actor, right, is just stay in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, without thinking about what happened before, what came before, without thinking about what the result is going to be.
Yeah, that's so true. Oh, that's so true. You may have already answered this, but in life, what's most important to you?
Ugh, I don't want to say anything that's like, you know.
Too heavy?
No, I don't want to say anything that sounds like cliche, because there are a lot of things that are really important to me. I've just now, really truly, just in the last couple of years, gotten to a place on a personal level where, like, I can say no to stuff. Not in a way that is, you know, rude or hurtful, but where I think, like...
How have you gotten better at that?
I don't know.
it just happened.
Well, I'll tell you how, because you realize that half of the things that you obsess about, like spending time with somebody you don't necessarily like all that much, or wanting to help somebody who doesn't need your help, trying to fix things that are impossible to fix, all of those things that we sort of put on ourselves... I talk to myself about those things a lot, about letting go, you know, just letting it all go. Because honestly, like, age-wise, I've never been all that concerned about the number, about how old I am, but I am concerned about how fast it's going. And so I realized that I needed to start, like, being in the moment. I'm somebody who, no matter what, whether I'm having a visit with a friend, or whether I'm making time to nap, or whether I'm going to a yoga class, for me, I'm always thinking in terms of the beginning, the middle, and the end. And so I kind of don't want to do that anymore. If I want to stay a little while longer, I want to be able to stay a little while longer. If I want to say no to something that I've been doing religiously for 20 years and change that up a little bit, I got to trust that there's a reason for that. And you know, they say, like, the definition of insanity is doing things the same way over and over again and expecting a different result.
Different results, yeah.
Yeah, that's my tagline for the end of this. What you were asking before, that's it.
You're answering the next question.
Yeah, I'm answering the next question.
The definition of insanity. Yeah, because my next question is that Billboard quote, and it would be...
That's it.
I love it.
You know, I just... I wish I could say, like, you know, what the most important thing is to me. Wait, what was your question?
Well, prior to it in life, what's most important to you?
What's most important to me? You know, like I said, I want to say like kindness and decency and respect and, you know, the things that seem boilerplate. But really what's most important to me, like definitely in the top five, is the work ethic. Because I think that that's changed. I think people have gotten kind of sloppy and kind of lazy.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so easy to find information.
It's hard to see that. It's hard to watch that.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to not take myself to task when I know that I'm being sloppy. But for me personally, and it's different for everybody, part of what changing things up to make myself happier and happiest sometimes for me means maybe not necessarily dotting every single I and crossing every single T and not seeing that as sloppy or messy. Because, right, life's messy. It's so messy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I know that I used to feel like I needed to do one thing and finish it beautifully, and only then could I sort of move on to the next thing. But now I just try and live in the mess.
Yeah, living in the mess. Finding, and I to bring up that word balance, but finding, you know, where it's like, am I being lazy or is it my pride getting the best of me? You know, I pick up a book, I read it, it sucks, and I don't put it down because I got to finish what I've started. It's like, is that pride or is that like,
oh, you got to put it down. There's way too many great books.
Yeah.
If you're not like having a great time right away, put it down.
Put it down.
Go somewhere else.
That's another great tagline for this.
I mean, but for your leisure stuff, sometimes leisure you can put stuff down, need to be done.
You got to push through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then my final question for you was this billboard quote. Metaphorically speaking, if you could put a word or a phrase for millions of people to see, what comes to mind?
I don't have one. Okay. I feel so much pressure now.
No, I know, but
haven't I given you enough pearls?
You did
already.
I just wanted to ask this question, so I ask it in every episode. I want to be on record. You gave me 1,000 pearls, and I really like the insanity one.
Yeah, I didn't make that one up, by the way. You know this.
Yes, I know. No, I know, but that's fine though. That's what.
Yeah.
A major theme of this.
It's just so hard because I think that if you struggle with something and you've struggled with it for a long time, sometimes you get comfortable in that struggle and you say that you want to change things up, but you really don't.
Mm.
You know, it's why people sometimes are just consistent victims you know, because that's what they're comfortable being. And also, like, I'm not judging that. I've been there, certainly, you know, but
to recognize it, you know, so you know, okay, and I mean, it applies to your personal life, it applies to your professional life. There are things that keep happening. You're like, why does this always happen to me? It's like, have you thought about the people you surround yourself with or the choices you're making, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, what you said about guilt, you know, I've learned that, you know, my problems are big because they're mine.
Mm.
You know, it's all like relative. I know a lot of people who are like, oh, you know, I can't complain about that or feel sad or scared of that or, you know, worry about this because I have it so much better than everybody else. You know, and it's like, yeah, you do. And you really have to like have some sort of a gauge, you know, as to what's important, like what you need to land hard on and what's okay to like not to just throw away.
Yeah.
But it does help to know, like, oh my God, all right, I have a roof over my head and I have food in my belly. And if, God forbid, I needed something, there's 5 people I could call who'd be here in a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this thing over here, it's not like life threatening. So let's just find some perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and then there are other things where I'm just going to let myself stomp around about. By myself, usually.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, Mary, this, I really appreciate where this conversation has gone.
Oh my God, it was so fun.
All over the map.
I know.
I'm floored.
Sort of thinking back, like, did I actually answer any of your questions, or did I just like go off on my own tangents?
Combo of both. No, you
answered
all the questions.
Yeah, I know. No, I did.
You answered
I know.
All the questions.
Okay. Okay.
I love it because I ask certain questions. This is the thing that I'm learning from doing these interviews. Is I ask a certain question, looking for a certain answer. You know, like I'm asking red or blue, and you give me yellow. But I love yellow because that my mind isn't even opened up to the answer that you gave me for like most of these.
Well, that's
you know
the only
I mean?
Reason to do this, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's why I love it. So even when you're like, I don't know if I answered. I'm like, no, you did. You answered
all of them. Well, I hope if I didn't, that you got something else that was like actually useful.
yeah, I did.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Mary Sugarman.
You've been listening to Entertainment X, the podcast. You can follow Entertainment X on Instagram at @_EntertainmentX_. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join Clay next week for another Curiosity Conversation on Entertainment X. Thank you for listening.